720 WGN, Mike Steven filling in for Justin Kaufman on this damp Monday, although the rain seems to have subsided a little bit, at least on Michigan Avenue in downtown Chicago as I look out here in the Allstate Showcase studio. We will keep you informed as to what's going on with your weather forecast, so keep it right here to 720 WGN. 312-981-7200 is the phone and the text line. And man, what a year it was here in Chicago when we talk about food. So much going on here in the food community, the food industry. And Anthony Todd is someone who is in the mix of it all. He is the food editor for Chicagoist.com. It's a great local blog, just covers everything having to do with Chicago. He is here in the Allstate Showcase studio this evening. I'm glad you braved the elements and you didn't, you know, float away somewhere or get caught in some sort of weird snow avalanche.
You know, it would have been easier if I'd worn some swim fins. I think I would have made it in easier, but I got here without drowning, which was really my objective. So
and I'm
glad
proud
to be
of
here.
You. I'm very proud of you for
I'm
doing
proud of
that.
Myself, frankly, and I usually don't say that.
You should be. Well, what you do at Chicagoist is great. You cover so much when we talk about food, because in Chicago and Chicagoland, there's a lot going on in the food community. And you wrote recently about the issue of some Chicago restaurants doing away with the practice of tipping. And tipping is something I think that is so ingrained in our culture. If you go to a restaurant, you are just, it's like, you know, programmed into your head that you are going to tip your server. And to say, like, no, you don't have to do that anymore, for some people, that's a really weird thing. Why are some Chicago restaurants doing away with tipping?
Well, so this big movement, it's not big enough to be a movement yet, but the move towards getting rid of tipping seems to be actually coming out of New York. And you know, we Chicagoans are loath to say anything is coming out of New York.
Yeah.
But this seems to be coming out of New York. Danny Meyer, who owns Union Square Hospitality, which is a lot of restaurants, and Shake Shack, which just came to Chicago, announced he was going to get rid of tipping. A week before that, the Radler, which is a great German spot in Logan Square, quietly announced the same thing. So they can say they're first. We can say we're first on the trend. But all the news came when Danny Meyer announced that he was doing it. And a few more Chicago restaurants are slowly getting on the bandwagon. It's really going to be into 2016 to see whether this becomes a real trend or just an isolated thing.
So when we talk about tipping, and I think when we do, we think of, okay, you are a server, you're trying to pay your bills. And yeah, you absolutely survive on tips. Why would you do away with tipping? How does that benefit the restaurant, and how is that going to benefit the people that work there?
Well, so one way it benefits the restaurant and the people who work there is it makes it a little bit more predictable. So one of the big arguments in favor of getting rid of tipping is that you're going to make the food cost what it actually costs to produce and serve. So rather than this sort of weird surprise at the end of the meal where you don't quite know what a dish actually cost, you're going to tack that 10, 15, 20% onto the menu, and then that's going to get passed on to the servers. So the servers might miss out on some big paydays when that guy comes in and orders the bottle of Cristal and tips on it. But at the same time, they're also going to have not so many slow nights where no one comes into the restaurant. They don't make their hourly wages. They're going to have a much more predictable weekly take home. And the restaurant's going to have a much more predictable budget, income, and outflow.
I see. So it's more predictable, I guess, for everybody, because the restaurant is going to know exactly how much money is going to be coming in and where that money is going. If you are a server, you are saying to yourself, okay, I know I'm going to take home this percentage no matter what. But in terms of, I guess, incentives, because you always think about, you know, tipping your server well, especially if you frequent a place and you have a particular server that you really like and you always take care of that person. It's sort of like, well, if I'm a server, I know that here comes Mike Steven and he's going to take care of me, or Anthony Todd, and he's going to definitely take care of me. So I'm really going to go that extra mile to make him happy. What about that incentive?
Absolutely. And that's the thing that most restaurateurs who've spoken against this are worried about, is they say, well, there's not going to be that incentive to really go the extra mile to try to push for that 20, that 25%, that 30% tip, that $100 bill at the end of the year if you're a regular customer. They're not going to get that. Now, the counter argument to that is that, well, really good restaurants want that level of service all the time, which is why you're seeing this trend mostly manifest itself at very expensive, very high-end restaurants that are tacking on service charges automatically to big bills. Their argument is, well, we can attract the kind of service talent where we don't need to worry about this. Everyone should be giving 110% all the time. Now, is that going to work for your neighborhood joint? I'm not sure where I come down on that. I think it's a mixed bag.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the list, and you've got places like Alinea, the Aviary, Modo. I mean, these are places that you're going to spend some coin at. And if you think about, like, the Diner Grill, like how does that work? If I'm trying to go at 3 in the morning and get the Slinger, and I'm not tipping the cook behind the counter because the Diner Grill has somehow done away with the practice of tipping. This is in my bizarro alternate universe. How does that work for the neighborhood joint?
You know, I'm not sure that it does work for the neighborhood joint, but one of the reasons why it's being done that impacts the neighborhood joint is that there's a big cook shortage right now. There was a huge story in the Washington Post. Every Chicago restaurateur is talking about it. There's a lot of trouble finding line cooks right now. And one of the reasons is because wages are not particularly high. Even for fairly skilled line cooks, wages are relatively low. So one of the reasons why restaurateurs are saying we're going to get rid of tipping is not just to get rid of tipping and make the server's wages predictable, but to equalize some of that front and back of the house, to say, well, it's not entirely fair that the people who cook your food are maybe making $9 an hour with no real possibility of, no matter how well they do, getting anything else, while the servers who are out there doing the dance make a lot of extra money if they do really well. The idea is we'll take in a fixed amount of money and distribute it a little more evenly, and maybe we'll be able to retain some talent back in the kitchen.
Oh, I see. And I guess that could go both ways, too, because if you're a server and you are doing that dance, you are, you know, putting on that front and that personality and that charm, because look, we like to go places where we feel welcome. And certainly the food is a big part of that, but it's also the ambiance and it's the experience. And especially in some of these places in Chicago, it's really kitschy and it's neighborhood and it's great and it's warm. And that's what we're looking for. And you can make the argument that if I'm in the front of the house or if I'm a server and I'm doing that, maybe I should get some more money.
Absolutely. No, and I totally see that. I have favorite servers at my favorite restaurants. I totally tip them well. I've had some experiences where I like being the customer who gets to not tip quite so well when I got awful service or I was made to sit for 45 minutes when no one paid attention to me. You do get some satisfaction out of being able to say, well, you're going to, you know, not suffer, but you're going to get a little
right,
less
there's
out
a consequence,
of it, right?
Yeah.
And that makes you feel powerful as a diner. So I'm actually not sure where I fall on this issue. I think it'll be really interesting to see how it plays out over the next couple of years to see if restaurants decide to really give this up in favor of predictability. I think that a lot of the big restaurant groups in Chicago have already sort of tentatively said, nah, we're not going to do this. Mm-hmm. And so it really depends on whether the few that pull it off do really well. If they do really well and they become an example, you'll see some others tentatively moving in the space. But otherwise, I think it's going to stay status quo. There's no crisis of tipping. There's no real impetus behind, oh my God, we have to change this now. There's no change in the tax laws. Like, there's no big reason why this has to happen in 2015. So while it made a lot of news, I think it's going to take a little while to see how it shakes out.
And when we talk about servers, again, the idea that struggling artist trying to make ends meet, but there's some servers at, like, I'm thinking like steakhouses, right, that you can make a lot of money.
Oh yeah,
if you are a server, especially if you've been doing it for a while at certain restaurants in Chicago. I mean, you can make some bank.
Oh, absolutely. You can make, I mean, think of some of the size of those checks. If you're even getting just 15% and no one's being generous, you're walking home at the end of the night with a pretty good wage, which is why people like that service industry kind of job. The hours can be more flexible. You can walk home with a lot of cash at the end of the night. Depending on the way your restaurant does it, you may or may not have some tax consequences to that cash at the end of the night. But, you know, it's a pretty great system as it exists. I think that the only problem, like I said, is that predictability. And once again, for certain restaurants, that idea that they want to incentivize everyone in the house to be on their game all the time, rather than the sort of crapshoot you get when you're not sure if you're going to get a good server or not. So instead of having the not good servers sort of voluntarily ease themselves out of the business by not getting very many tips, the idea would be that you could potentially fire them if they're not performing and replace them with really good people because everyone's getting the same amount of money.
So when we talk about this possibly doing away with tipping, I mean, I said at the outset of our conversation that it's really difficult for some of us to wrap our heads around. You are the food editor at Chicagoist, so you've talked to a lot of people in the Chicago food community. I mean, are people having that same reaction? Are they thinking, like, how in the heck are we going to do this? Is this just blowing minds?
Absolutely. No, and I think that's one of the reasons you're not seeing really rapid movement on this. There's not a lot of people jumping on this bandwagon yet. And it's because it's not just blowing minds in the sense that diners don't know quite how to do it. It's that restaurants don't know quite how to do it. Because if you're a restaurant and you're going to stick your neck out and say, well, we're going to raise the prices of every dish on the menu by 22%, 10% or 25% or whatever it costs to get rid of tipping. Yeah, intellectually, people will realize, well, I don't have that tip line at the end of the meal.
Right.
But at the same time, you're looking at the menu and the dish that cost $33 now costs $40. And you could go to the restaurant next door where it still costs $33.
Oh.
And you don't think of it the same way. When I budget for a meal, and this is probably stupid, when I budget for a meal, I don't think about the tip.
I don't either.
You don't think about it.
Yeah.
And so even though at the end of the day, when we get the credit card bill, it's the same amount of money. Looking at the menu and seeing that dish suddenly costing 20-25% more, you're taking a gamble. So that's why these restaurant groups, I think, are not going to move on this yet. I think, you might see it if a couple of these places do really well, but that big a jump in prices could really affect your business.
It makes sense, though. And again, it goes back to what we're talking about the environment and the feeling, because a good portion of what it is to be a good restaurant is to create that. It's to put on that show. I mean, it is a little bit of showmanship, right?
Absolutely.
Even at your neighborhood joints that maybe don't care about that as much, you go there because it's that sense of community. And I think that if you start to see the stuff on the menu, like, oh, this is costing more, in our reptile brains, we'll think, yeah, you know what? Yeah, I'm going to the place down the street. Absolutely.
Totally.
So.
The only thing that I get so many questions about tipping. As a food writer, you get more questions about tipping than anything else.
Yeah.
And the one nice thing, if this became a thing, is I would not get those questions anymore. I wouldn't get the, do you tip on the wine? And do you tip the busboy? And do you tip the bartender? And how do you handle it? Is it 10% or is it 18%? And what do you do at Christmas? And people are very angsty about tipping.
Yeah.
And so I think that that's the one good thing that could come of this if it ever went anywhere, is that social angst we have around who do we tip, what, when, and how would at least go away a little bit. Now, some of that's a little fun because you can play the calculators and game the system and feel like a generous person. So it goes both ways.
Do you go 18% around Christmas? I'm just wondering.
I tend to go somewhere in the 20% range all the time because I'm closer to the industry. And so not only do I see how hard people are working, but I also occasionally get recognized, and you don't want to be known as the media person who stiffs people.
Right. I guess, I mean, Christmas time, I try to go over 20. I'm usually a 20% kind of tipper.
Yeah.
Unless something has gone awry.
Oh, yeah.
If something's gone wrong, then we're going to have words, and the tip will. I've never not tipped. I'll just say that.
That's impressive. I have, in fact, not tipped.
You've not tipped?
I've not tipped.
You know we're on the air right now.
I know
this
we're on the air
right now. This is a 50,000-watt radio
servers
station.
Servers are going to come and have pitchforks outside the windows of the studio.
These windows are bulletproof, so.
Thank goodness. But I have not tipped. It's a rare occasion. It's a very rare occasion. I can probably count the number on one hand where I've not tipped.
Let me qualify that. I've not tipped probably unintentionally.
Well, that's a problem.
Well,
that's worse than not tipping
intentionally. Well, no, like in college, you know, you have some late nights, diners.
You stumble out.
I mean, it's not like
the tip.
Yeah, it's more that I forgot.
Okay. Well,
but
that's okay.
I graduated college many years ago. I've tipped ever since then. Right now, my mom's listening saying, what kind of son have I raised?
Oh, no.
No, it's great. Everything's great. I tip a lot. Anthony Todd is the food editor of Chicagoist.com. Stay tuned. We'll have more with Anthony. Can you stick around for a second?
Absolutely.
All right. We'll talk more about the year in food here in Chicago, and the best, according to you, Anthony, the best bar in Chicago.
I know. It's going to give me some flack.
It's a little controversial.
It's very controversial.
And it's very, like, you have to look for it. It's very out of the way.
I know, it's secret.
So we'll get that secret out there. Stay tuned. Mike Steven in for Justin Kaufman right here on 720 WGN. Mike Steven, fill it in for Justin Kaufman here on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200 is the phone and the text line here in the Allstate Showcase studio. Just talking about some food here in Chicago, looking back on 2015. Anthony Todd is the food editor at Chicagoist.com, a great Chicago blog covering all kinds of arts and culture and politics in the city. And I'll tell you, one of the most controversial posts that you put out there, Anthony, this post about the best, according to you,
yes,
the best bar in Chicago. And I feel like it's such a subjective thing when we say best new restaurant, best bar. But you are adamant about this, aren't you?
I am adamant about it. Now, it's worth noting that, especially in the world of the internet, those kind of superlatives are important for us to get clicks. They're important for us to get eyes.
Okay.
There's a lot of best of lists that are really like the best seven things we went to in the last day and a half that we happen to remember.
And number four will blow your mind.
Exactly. Yeah, right. This one, I will say, is at least very special. You know, the best bar in Chicago is going to be everyone's favorite corner bar. Everyone has their own best bar.
Right, right, right.
But this one, at least, is a little bit different than some of the other places.
And this bar is called Milk Room.
Yep.
And tell us, so it's not like you can walk down the street and it's on the corner and there's a big bright sign that says Milk Room. Tell us about how we get to this bar.
So how you, well, first off, you buy a ticket, but we'll talk about that in a second.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How to find the bar in the first place, though, the bar is located in the Chicago Athletic Association Hotel Complex, which is on Michigan Avenue. It
right.
opened earlier this year. It's an architectural marvel. If anyone hasn't been in it, go in, just wander around the lobby. You feel like you're suddenly in a Harry Potter novel. It's amazing.
Is that by Millennium Park?
It is right across from Millennium Park. It is the most beautiful hotel lobby I've ever seen. And they've got lots of different food and drink venues inside it. So you walk in, there's a big lobby, there's drinks there, there's a game room, you can play pool and all sorts of other fun games and get drinks there. There's a full restaurant. There's a rooftop bar. So there's a ton of stuff going on in this building. And when it opened, there was no Milk Room. Now, if you walk off the lobby, you're going to see a guy with a podium looking as discreet as possible so that you don't see him if you don't know where you're supposed to go.
Okay.
And then you'll see an unmarked door. And if you are supposed to be there, you'll know where to go. And the guy will have your name and he'll let you in this tiny little room.
Okay, so let's just review, because there's a lot going on there. So you go to the Chicago Athletic Association Hotel on Michigan Avenue across from Millennium Park.
Yes.
And anybody can walk in.
Anyone can walk in.
Okay. And it's really cool looking in there.
Super cool.
You have to look for the guy at a little stand.
Yep.
And he's standing. This is like out of a James Bond film.
You know the password.
Yeah, right. He's standing in front of an unmarked door.
Yep.
And you go to him. Do you need to scan your retina or your thumb?
You know, it almost felt like it.
Okay.
Luckily, they had your name.
So once they have your name, you go through the door.
Well, you may have to wait a little while because your entry is timed. That's the other thing that's a little weird here.
That's the other catch, because how big is this place?
8 seats.
So this bar seats 8 people.
This bar seats 8 people. 8 people, 1 bartender.
All right. So I'm thinking, like, have you been to the Matchbox?
I have.
All right.
It's smaller than the Matchbox.
Smaller than the Matchbox.
Maybe not in terms of square footage, because the Matchbox is unique. But
okay.
I don't know how many seats the Matchbox has, but I'm pretty sure it's more than 8.
Yeah, I think it's got like 10 or 12.
Yeah. I think this still wins for Chicago's smallest bar.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So, all right, you go in there, and what's it like inside?
It's dark. It's wood paneled. It's very classic. The entire building is done up in this sort of teens and 20s style. So there's a lot of candlelight or faux candlelight. There's a lot of wood paneling. And there are just rows and rows and rows and rows of antique liquor bottles.
Wow.
Ungettable liquor bottles that you could never possibly go to Binny's and buy.
Uh-huh.
And so the one thing that's a little weird that I said I'd talk about is you have to buy a ticket to get into this bar.
Yeah, on their website, right?
On the website. So they use a ticketing system actually developed by the guy who owns Alinea and the Aviary. And the idea is you buy a timed ticket. So you have to actually buy a ticket for, say, I think my ticket was for 5:30. And if you go at 5:20, they say, nope, wait outside. You can't
really?
Come in yet. You can't come in yet. We're not ready for you yet. You get in right at the time your ticket is for. The ticket costs money. You have to pay $50 for this ticket.
That's like your cover charge.
But the one nice thing I will say is that all $50 gets applied to your tab. So your ticket actually costs $0. It's just the down payment.
Oh, okay.
So you don't
actually.
So that's the nice thing about this system is you're not getting ripped off. It's not like you're paying for a fancy seat. You're just, they're making sure you're serious.
Right.
Because they only have 8 seats. So if there's a no-show, they're out some money.
So why is it the best bar in Chicago?
So the reason why it's the best bar in Chicago, if you're a cocktail geek, it's very specifically for cocktail people.
Okay.
It's not the best beer bar. It's not the best wine bar. But if you're a cocktail geek, Paul McGee, who's the bartender, has assembled a collection of spirits that is literally impossible to get anywhere else in the United States. So you can have things like pre-embargo Cuban rum mixed into your cocktails.
Wow.
You can have liqueurs from the 30s. You can have bourbon from the 50s. Stuff that's literally not only older than I am, but older than probably most of the listening audience is.
Wow.
And they buy this stuff all over the place. They get it out of warehouses. They get it at estate sales. They find sort of half-empty bottles hiding in street corners. I don't know where they get the stuff. But that's the real reason, besides the fact that the cocktails are perfect, which goes without saying at the prices they're charging, it's that the cocktails are perfect and they're made with this stuff that is unique. You know, these flavors are gone. These are things you cannot have anymore.
Wow. So yeah. That's all at Milk Room. And if you want to buy tickets, I don't think you can do it for the rest of December.
No, I'm sure they're sold out.
But if you want to be patient, milkroomchicago.com is the website. Milkroomchicago.com. And so says Anthony Todd, you got to go because it's like the best bar in Chicago.
Yeah.
So you got to go into the secret, super secret door at Chicago Athletic Association Hotel. You got to buy a ticket, of course, yep. milkroomchicago.com. But check out Milk Room. Hey, thank you for coming by. I appreciate it. Anthony Todd is the food editor at Chicagoist.com. I'm glad you made it with the lovely weather we've been having tonight.
Thank goodness. You know what? Now I have to make it home without drowning, which is impressive. I may need a dog sled to get home.
Godspeed.
Thank you.
My friend, Godspeed. Thanks for all you do. You really write some great stuff, so keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you.
You got it. Mike Steven in for Justin Kaufman. That tone means it's 9 o'clock. We'll take a short, very short break and get to Rob Martyr's news right here on 720 WGN.